Welcome to A Break in the Action, where we take a break from the business of our days to focus on outdoor pursuits and the traditional sporting lifestyle. Join us for discussion and interviews on vintage and modern break action shotguns, sporting literature, outdoor leisure, and reviews of best-in-class gear, accessories, and destinations. So pour yourself a drink, sit back, relax, and let's take a break in the action. A Break in the Action is proud to be sponsored by Dewberry of Ireland, B&P Shot Shells, Negrini Cases, and Cole Fine Guns and Gunsmithing. And now, here's your host, shotgun collector, wing shooter, and sporting clays enthusiast, Ryan Dowdy.
Before we kick this episode off, I want to introduce you to what might be a new concept. I'm going to call it shotgun tourism. Recent travels had me in New York City, Manhattan specifically, and being something of a watch fan, I knew that Madison Avenue was home to the boutique stores for Jaeger LeCoultre, Vacheron Constantin, Grand Seiko, A. Lange & Söhne, plus the amazing Bucherer store. But did you also know that sitting discreetly on Madison Avenue behind an imported Italian stone facade is the equally impressive several thousand square foot multi-level Beretta gallery? Stopping into this amazing store gives you the opportunity to see and purchase the very best that is the Beretta Premium Collection. Two floors of the highest quality field and lifestyle apparel, furniture, and accessories sit below the third floor, the gun floor. Beretta DT11s, SL3s, 687 EELLs, Mark Newsome 486s, a selection of the amazing Beretta SOs, it's all here. If you're interested in something other than Beretta, bolt-action rifles by Tika and Sako, double rifles and shotguns from Chapuis, there's a ton to see here, so plan accordingly. The crown jewel for me, and the main reason for my visit, was to see Hemingway's Beretta S3, which is beautifully displayed, unrestored, looking just like it did the last time Papa carried it afield. I want to give a special thank you to Travis and the rest of his team there. If you find that you're one of the 60 million plus visitors to New York City this year, and you have even a passing interest in better or best shotguns and apparel, I would definitely recommend a stop by the Beretta Gallery. Now let's move on to the subject of this podcast. The clay target shooting sports are generally very linear games. Targets leave the machine, and for the most part, they follow a set trajectory to the ground. There are variations, of course. Trap introduces an oscillator or a wobble. Skeet has the shooter move to vary the angle and necessary lead. A Chandel target in a round of sporting clays changes speed as it falls from the peak of its arc, and the occasional rabbit surprises with a bounce. Generally, though, targets follow a known and reliable path. Trap, skeet, and sporting clays and their varieties are civilized and academic. Helice, on the other hand, is more like the wild, wild west. Before I describe helice to you, we need to take a step back in time. Live pigeon shooting is thought to have originated as far back as the 1700s in Georgian England. Shoots were originally organized by the landed gentry of the day. It became wildly popular because of the gambling opportunities that it offered. Live pigeon shooting was most famously linked to Monte Carlo, one of the nine city-states of Monaco. Beginning as far back as 1872, live pigeon shoots were held continuously behind the exquisite Monte Carlo Casino until about 1960. Live pigeon shooting became so popular that it was actually an event in the 1900 Olympic Games in Paris, with Roger de Barbarin of France taking the gold. That was, by the way, its first and only showing at the Games. Interestingly, he is attributed in the official Olympics registry as taking gold in the event of trap, not live bird or box bird shooting, as would have been more accurate. In its heyday, huge shoots were organized in Monaco, Havana, Rome, and domestically in cities like Philadelphia, Cincinnati, and Louisville. Shooters used specialty 12-gauge doubles with no safeties, capable of routinely detonating heavy, hard-hitting loads. Barrels were longer, at least 30 inches, and were choked full and full. They often featured a raised rib and a raised comb. The Monte Carlo stock was created for those shoots and remains popular as a stock design today. A fast-flying special breed of rock pigeon called a Zorrito was the preferred target. Remember this. Live pigeon shooting has always been the center of controversy, hence the reason for its short run in the Olympic Games. A few years after that, it was banned in the UK. American actress Grace Kelly, who married the Prince of Monaco, was an outspoken critic of the live pigeon shooting behind the famed Monte Carlo casino, insisting on its cancellation in 1960. Soon then after, a new game was created to replicate the unpredictability and thrill of live pigeon shooting. That brings us to the subject of our show today. Originally referred to as ZZ Bird because the targets were cast from zinc and designed to mimic that Zorrito pigeon that we mentioned earlier. Zinc Zorrito eventually devolved into ZZ. Today, the discipline is known best as hélice, in some areas electrossibles. Hélice is the French word for propeller, which makes a ton of sense when you see one of these targets. The two-part target consists of a witness cap that is snapped into a base with blades that protrude out of opposing sides, just like a propeller. The thrower both oscillates and wobbles, much like a trap machine, but with one major difference. The targets spin at upwards of 7,500 RPM. Stepping up to shoot hélice, a menacing whirr sound can be heard as the targets spool up. On your call, the winged target is released and flies in an erratic, unpredictable, and definitely non-linear way. I'd like to quickly recognize the fantastic book Live Pigeon Trap Shooting by Cyril S. Adams. While I haven't yet gotten through this book cover to cover, most of the history I've just shared with you was pulled from its pages. If you're interested in the history of live pigeon shooting, I highly recommend this book. Cyril Adams, by the way, owned the wonderful Atkin, Grant, and Lang, and was an accomplished hélice shooter himself. He passed a few years ago, but the renaissance of British doubles that we enjoy today is due in large part to him. We're going to talk in depth about the hélice shooting experience, and I can promise you, if you haven't yet, you're going to want to try it. You're going to find that, unfortunately, there may not be a hélice field in your immediate area. The U.S. Hélice Association website only lists 24 venues across the United States, 9 of which are in Texas, 4 in California, and the others are randomly scattered across the U.S. You'll remember my friend Chris Pierce from our Grand Batu shoot at Green Acres in December. Chris and I visited Prairie Wildlife in West Point, Mississippi for our introduction to hélice. You've heard me mention that concept of a stay-and-play weekend getaway for shooting before. The necessary ingredients for a trip like this are a top-quality shooting experience paired with best-in-class accommodations, food, and hospitality. Prairie Wildlife definitely checks all these boxes. The perennial Orvis-endorsed wing shooting lodge was named Orvis Lodge of the Year in 2020. That pretty much says it all. The vast, nearly 5,000-acre property has a rich history of serious conservation research and is managed in a way that lets it maintain its natural beauty. I'd like to first introduce you to Phil McClellan. Phil is the vice president of B. Bryan Farms. Prairie Wildlife is a subsidiary of B. Bryan Farms. Phil, you gave us a fantastic overview of the Prairie Wildlife property when we visited, and I really just wanted to have you come on and give us that same description today.
Prairie Wildlife was started in 2010, and it's located kind of in the middle of B. Bryan Farms, which is approximately 3,200 acres, and that 3,200 acres is basically made up of about 900 acres of row crop farmland and about 1,000 acres of pasture. And the rest of it, over the last 20 years or so, has been converted to some form of wildlife habitat, that is. So you have a pretty diversified piece of property where when we started trying to convert, you know, getting the quail back in this piece of property, a lot of it was converted from pasture land to native warm season grasses, which has been in this part of the world for, you know, a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned its size, and it is vast. I would say that even though there are all these activities going on all across the property, and we'll get into those, It feels very natural in its layout. I know that's been very deliberate as you guys have restored it from primarily pasture. A lot of thought and work has gone into that.
Yeah.
Give us an introduction to the lodge.
Yeah, the Bryan Lodge, is the main focus of Prairie Wildlife. Of course, it is where it's our central meeting place. That's where our guests check in, and we can accommodate 12 guests there. It has a large gathering room with a nice fireplace and dining room, and has a lake right out front. And we've got a nice pro shop in our lodge, which has, you know, the finest sporting gear, clothing, and accessories that you like. And just about everything from, our dining and all that takes place there at the Bryan Lodge.
Yeah. I know the first day that we were there, a corporate group was staying and meeting at the lodge. Is that a pretty regular booking for you guys?
Yes. Bryan, we do quite a bit of corporate outings. Matter of fact, I'd say that's probably 80% of our business, our corporate outing.
Yeah, it looked like you had some really nice facilities dedicated to groups that still wanted to get just a little bit of work done while they stayed there on property.
We really cater to this small, 10 to 25 group corporate outings. And the good thing about it is we're kind of out in the middle of nowhere. So it's almost like they have their own private whole lodge, so to speak, if they want to get away from everybody and not know what's going on, anything, this is the place to be and have some fun and get some work done at the same time. And, if somebody has a long day and they want to have a massage, we can even get that lined up for them on the site.
That's great. I have to say that one of my favorite features of the lodge is your 5-stand setup.
Right.
Over the lake that is literally like right off of the front porch.
Right. Yes. And that's pretty convenient. A lot of these guys, the 5-stand is actually a 5-station clay shooting deal right there in front, and it's overlooking, the lake. So it's a great place to come and warm up before you go hunting, or, if you want to shoot some late afternoon or something to kind of hone in on your shooting skills.
Yep. The only downside to it is that since it's so close to the lodge and right down from the front porch, there's the potential for an entire gallery to be watching and counting your misses, especially in my case.
Yes.
So now that we've gotten the potential work part of the visit out of the way, what other activities are available on the property?
Of course, I just mentioned the 5-stand, but we also have what we call a line shoot. And what the line shoot is you can shoot either birds or clays out of some cedars, and it simulates kind of almost like a tower shoot, but you got like 5 or 6 people in a straight line, and they're shooting at pheasants or clays. And one reason we did this is you can accommodate a small number of people. You don't have to have 20 people at this particular deal. You can do it with 2 shooters or 5 shooters or, 6 or 8 shooters. So it's a great little venue for if you just have like, 5 or 6 people in your party.
Yep. Chris and I got to shoot this and it was a ton of fun. We had kind of a mixed bag of live birds and with some clay targets mixed in, so it really kind of kept us on our toes. Now, your biggest draw to the property has to be your quail hunt.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Okay. We offer a half-day hunt and a full-day hunt with the guide with trained quail dogs. And most of this is on kind of like the Black Prairie native grass deal. So it's a great setting for quail hunting. And we also have a mixed bag hunt, which is quail, pheasant, and chucker. So you can, shoot at all those 3 different species in one hunt. And we also offer deer hunts and dove hunts. And we offered a youth hunt when we first started about 10 years ago. And it's a pretty cool deal. We call it my first game. And what it is, you know, like a grandfather and his grandson can come hunting and say if they go hunting, whatever, and they kill a whatever, that we'll plant a tree around the lake and we'll put the date on there, you know, who it is, and those guys can come back, say, 20 years from now, you know, with the tree full grown and showing, well, hey, you know, this was the first time I ever went hunting with my grandfather and my father, whatever. So that, you know, I think that's a really special, cool idea that we came up with.
Yeah. I love that. What a really neat idea. Now, one thing that we did not get to try was your tower shoot. And I've seen quite a few tower shoots, but what you offer is honestly, it's on a whole nother level. So tell us about the Prairie Wildlife Tower Shoot.
Okay, the tower shoot, it's probably one of the nicest towers you'll see in the United States. Yep, towards, you know, shooting plays or pheasants out of a tower. But the cool, it's kind of simulates something in Europe, how they did a, you know, a European pheasant hunt or whatever there. But the tower itself is about 50 feet high, and you have about 10 butts around the tower. They're all at different levels, so you have a different perspective, you know, on each shot. And the way it works is we usually have 10 to 20 shooters, either one shooter or two shooters at each butt. And the cool thing about it is we'll ride on a back of a trailer on start at Cathy's Hill. We have a nice pavilion that you can see the tower from. We ride there and drop everybody off at each butt. And the first round, some people will start on an even number butt, and some will start at an odd number butt. And so after about 20 or so birds or targets or whatever, you'll rotate. So each person will make a round twice. So they're going to get the even, you know, same amount of shooting in each butt. So everybody has the same opportunity to shoot all the way around the tower twice. So they all, you know, can get and a, you know, even number of targets.
Yeah. I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit here, Phil, but to give listeners a sense of scale, or the scale that we're talking about, what would you say the distance from one peg or butt to the tower is? And again, these are laid out in a circle, but from one shooting peg just to the tower.
Yeah, you're spread out, and you're actually about 80 yards, wow. 80 or 85 yards from the tower itself.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely not like anything I've ever seen before. Even the attention to detail that you paid to the dug-in butts that you shoot from is worth mentioning. These are kind of stacked stone and have a really authentic feel to them. I definitely want to get back sometime and try that out soon. You guys also have a pretty unique ability to pair a shooting visit and stay at the lodge with some pretty epic golfing opportunities. So why don't you tell us about that?
Right. Yeah. We can offer, we were very fortunate to have two really nice golf courses here in West Point. One is Old Waverly, which hosted the 1999 U.S. Women's Championship there. And we also have the Mossy Oak course, just right across the street from it. But the great thing about it is, you know, if somebody wants to come in and quail hunt with us one morning, we can line them up to go play golf the next afternoon or next day at Old Waverly or the Mossy Oak course, which is 10 minutes away from us. So we can offer that package to people.
Yeah. Yeah. I know there are a few misguided souls who would like to spend some of their time there golfing as opposed to shooting. That would not include me, for the record.
Yes.
But so Phil, obviously each guest has the ability to choose how they want to spend their day, but walk us through what a typical day might look like.
A lot of these guys come in on a late afternoon, and they'll check into the lodge, and once they check in, they can enjoy a cocktail or a cigar on the front porch of the lodge. And if they want to do a little bass fishing or whatever that afternoon, you know, they're welcome to do that. And next morning they'll eat breakfast at 8 o'clock, and about 9:30 go hunt that morning from 9:30 to to 12 and come back for lunch. And if you do an afternoon hunt, you'll hunt from about 2 to 5 in the afternoon and come back. And then we'll about 6, you'll have a cocktail hour, and 7 have dinner. So that's, if you have a full day deal, that's kind of the way our schedule is there.
Perfect. Perfect. And Phil, for those that may not be familiar, put Prairie Wildlife on the map for us.
Well, we're pretty accessible. We're actually, in the Golden Triangle area, which is Columbus, Starkville, and West Point. And, the airport, is not like 30 miles from us. And, you can take a direct flight from Golden Triangle to Atlanta, you know, to make any connections. And we're actually fairly close to Memphis, Tennessee, which is like a 2-hour drive, or Jackson, Mississippi is not like a 2-hour drive. So we're pretty easy to get to.
Very good. Phil, thank you for all the great information. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
While Prairie Wildlife is an amazing place to visit and stay, on this trip, we were there to shoot Jalice. Our first chance would come after dinner on the day that we arrived, under the lights. Under the expert tutelage of Mr. Xavier Fairley, we got an overview of Jalice and how it's shot. Xavier is both a certified NSCA and Orvis shooting instructor. If you investigate Jalice shooting in the U.S. at all, you will certainly come across articles and videos featuring Xavier. He has become the voice of Jalice shooting, and for good reason. He understands the game intimately and can explain it expertly to a new shooter. Let me now introduce you all to Mr. Xavier Fairley. Xavier, welcome to A Break in the Action. How are you?
I'm good. I'm very good. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you helping out. So you undoubtedly speak to a lot of shooters who have never shot and possibly never even seen Jalice. How would you describe it?
Well, I would tell you that Jalice is a very instinctive type of wing shooting, probably the most instinctive type of wing shooting you can do and not shoot at something with feathers. And this game was actually designed to kind of mimic box bird pigeon shooting.
Okay. So for someone who is brand new to Jalice shooting, explain what they're going to see when they first step onto a ring. Walk us through how the target is different, how the course is laid out, and then how does scoring actually work?
The targets are different in that it has wings and it's not clay. It's made out of plastic, two parts. The wings themselves would put you in the mind of a boat propeller. The plastics do look like a clay, but it's white and it's attached to those wings. The game is shot from a distance of 26 meters or backwards off. And when you walk up to that line, right there where you're standing, you're going to see a microphone, which you activate because you call for your own target. When you look out at the course, you will put you in the mind of a small little league baseball field. You'll see 5 machines sitting out there, kind of in an arch. Those machines will be 26 meters from that line, and the fence will be another 19 meters from where the machines are sitting. It's got a little fence around it without a bounds. That fence is 2 foot high all the way, or I should say from where the machines sit to the top of the fence is 2 foot elevation from corner to corner. Yeah, you'll see targets that fly very, very different from clays because, unlike clays, they don't hold a straight line. In certain disciplines of the shooting sport, you're taught to shoot where the target is going.
Yeah.
You cannot do that in the game of Jalice because they dart, dive, bank, they change directions, you know, just inadvertently.
Yeah, that they definitely do. When I first saw a Jalice ring, it felt sort of familiar. It sort of feels like you're standing on the line getting ready to shoot trap. You stand a similar distance behind 5 throwers. One of the first differences that you'll notice is that you shoot it alone. There's only one shooter at a time, not 5 individual shooters shoulder to shoulder like in trap. You mentioned the target. They're actually a 2-part target where, in our case, we had kind of a white witness cap that snaps into a winged base. The machines are also really, really different. Tell us about the thrower.
The thrower if you will, you can relate it to, think about the way a wobble trap moves. It's got a carousel out in front of it that holds 50 targets. Once those machines are started up, and all five of them start up at one time once you push the button, they oscillate. They actually wobble. They go side to side and up and down, intermittently. And when you call for a target, any one of those five machines will release a target. The only thing definite about it is there will be a target released, and it will be starting from down low at machine level. The unknown is where it'll fly, how it'll fly, and really how fast it'll fly.
Yeah, and when you said that they spin, when these throwers spool up, how fast are they spinning these targets?
Yeah, normally these machines, they can run anywhere from 4,000 RPMs up to 12,000. But normally they run somewhere around 48, depending on the wind. It's kind of an industry standard to set the targets to be 2.5-3 seconds from leaving the machine to out the ring. Wind affects them greatly, so that, you know, setting the targets vary every day. So you've got more time than you think to break those targets, but not really a lot of time.
Yeah. We shot on three different days. Two of the days were pretty calm, but the third day we had some noticeable wind, and I can say that wind, I mean, it really affects how they fly. Even on calm days, though, these targets don't fly straight or in a predictable way, do they?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. One might say that when they run out there low and get to a fence, they act like they have eyes.
Yeah, feels like they jump right over it.
Absolutely.
Yep. Chris and I both had targets that would just skim low right over the ground, and then they seemed to just lift off when they got to the fence. So how does scoring work in Heli Savior?
Every target's worth 1 point. A full game is called a race. A race is 30 birds. 30 birds is normally shot in cranks, which is intervals of five targets. So one might go to the line. They would need to take, obviously, their shotgun and a minimum of 10 shells, because you do have an opportunity to shoot twice at each one of these targets. You don't have to, but the opportunity is there. And, you know, you kind of have to just really go into a zone. I will say that this discipline of shooting sport, it's very mental. You need a minimum of distraction. Five birds, and you can go back and relax while somebody else does it.
And there is something else that's going to be new to many. Helis has a language that's kind of all its own. You're going to need to learn some new terms. So to recap, a full round in Helis is called a race and consists of 30 targets. Those are broken down into cranks, which is each shooter's set of five targets. There are six cranks that make up a race.
That is correct.
Then in regards to scoring, the key factor that dictates whether a target is a hit or a miss is what?
That target, that white cap, has to be totally separated from any remnants of the orange wings and land inside the course, inside the fence.
Yeah, which is about 19 yards or 2.5 seconds away from the thrower.
Yes, sir.
You mentioned that you need to minimize distractions. What advice do you give a new shooter on how to break one of these targets?
First thing I tell them is slow, smooth. Smooth is fast enough. I tell them that these birds fly pretty erratically, so you don't want to race to a sound. You want to move fluidly to the target, and you can't lead them. You've got to pull the trigger as you're passing through, because they do change directions. I always recommend to a shooter that this game's pre-mounted.
Yeah. Definitely.
Everybody that I know that shoots this game competitively and does well at it shoots pre-mounted. So you want to develop a pre-shot routine. You want to go to the line with the same thought, the same motion, and the same rhythm every time. clear head.
Mm-hmm. You told me the first time that I shot to have a soft focus, to kind of see everything. You don't know which of the five machines will release a target, and from there, you don't know which direction that target is going to fly out of the machine. So you really need to be able to see the entire ring all at once.
What I normally tell people is to make your hold point a little below the top of the machine. Some people hold right at the top. I like halfway down where the doors hinge. And then I then tell them to look out a little bit above the top of the fence, open their eyes so that they can, they don't really see any machine, but they can see all of the machines in their peripheral. And that makes it much easier to pick up the target, because you're looking out there. It's much easier for a human being to focus in and lock.
Yeah, great point.
Than it is to be focused on something in and then have to go out and find it.
Yep. Yep, that's a really, really good point. Let's talk about the equipment used for Jalisco. What kind of shotgun is most often used? We were only shooting 12 gauge, and I think that that's all that we saw others shooting. Is that pretty much the standard?
It is the standard. There are people that, you know, may start off shooting a 20 or even a 16. 12 gauge over and under shotgun is my gun of choice. Some people do. They're nostalgic. They want to shoot a side-by-side, but the point of impact on side-by-sides is normally much lower, or flatter, I should say, than it would be on a sporting gun. You want a sporting gun because you want a heavy gun. I think that barrel length is important. It's going to vary a little bit from person to person, but I like 30 inches or longer. You want that laid out there on the end, because once you start the gun to moving, it'll just move.
Right.
And then the gun should be choked, modified or tighter for this game. Modified, not mod, I think is ideal. Also, it's very, very important to know what shell works best with your gun and the chokes that you're using. So, you know, patterning a shotgun for this specific sport is very important. I know you noticed that there were several targets that were hit that did not separate.
Yeah.
And that's because if you shoot too hot of a shell or even a shell that your gun doesn't like, there will be holes in your pattern. And these targets don't break easy. They don't separate easy. You know, five or six pellets will not do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, it seems like you really need to punch these targets pretty hard to ensure that you separate that cap. We were shooting primarily, I think, only 7.5s and a pretty hot load. Is that pretty standard shot shell for Jalisco?
Yeah. I do like a 7.5, and I like a speed anywhere between 1200, 1290. 1250 to me is ideal. And if I'm going to use an 8, I want to use it in my first barrel. I want it at a slower speed, because if you need that second shot, you don't want to have to get back at the gun and reacquire the target. You want to be able to flow through and do it fluidly.
Yeah. We were shooting BNP shot shells. Hat tip to our great sponsor. They actually supplied us with some of their new shells specifically designed for Jalisco. Those were 7.5 shot. I think they were 1300 FPS or thereabouts. I need to double check the specs on those.
The ones I saw you shooting with 13, those are great shells. The technology in those shells is cutting edge. It really is. They pattern well. Almost all guns like it. And they're even packaged for the convenience of not having to weight yourself down with shells.
Yep, yep. These are actually packaged in a 10-round box. Remember that each crank is 5 targets, and you can and probably should always shoot twice at each target. So boxes of 10 is perfect. Xavier, did we leave anything out? Is there anything else that you would want to add?
This is what I do know about Jalisco. Jalisco is a very, very, it's a social sport. It's because of the instinctive nature of shooting Jalisco, police will, if you become accomplished at this sport, then you will be pretty much accomplished at any discipline of wing shooting. I don't, because it's instinctive. And I don't think that that necessarily applies to any other discipline.
Yeah. Yep. And I have a real hard time when I transition each year from shooting clay targets all spring and summer to shooting more instinctively in the grass woods, for example, in the fall. I can see Helice as an incredible way to prepare yourself for the upcoming bird season. So all of you bird hunters out there that are listening, even if you have no interest in competitive Helice, you'd be doing yourself a favor spending a late summer weekend shooting it.
Yeah, I feel the same way about it. I think that these Helice machines are the best tools that I have when I do the schools for upland game hunting. I mean, you go to where clay is and you get build a person's confidence. You could take the time to work on stands, work on gun mount, really shoot pre-mount. But you go out here on this Helice field and take a remote. You put one or two throwers out there, they make a remote control that works on them. You walk them in just like you're taking them in on a guided hunt. You say, whoa, dog's getting birdie. You stop. I've even got a pop-up dog I can put out there. You walk up behind the dog and you tell them make ready. They make ready. You release one of five targets or two of five targets, and they have to react to it. The good thing about it is it doesn't only teach them how to be an instinctive wing shooter. You also create a scenario where you have an opportunity to have teaching moments on what not to shoot at when you go hunting.
Yeah.
Because you don't know where these targets are going to throw.
Great point. Yep.
If it throws a low bird in that scenario, it's like, and they don't shoot at it, then it's a time to positively reinforce it. Let them know that they're doing the right thing, that it's just not worth it. Remind them about dogs and people and the unknown. And, you also build confidence in them shooting from an alert position, killing birds. So it's I don't know that when they created this game, they had that in mind, but I immediately saw the use for it.
Yeah. Yeah. All really good points. Definitely. Xavier, the Helice fields that are on the Prairie Wildlife property are actually known by the name Black Prairie Helice. What can you tell us about Black Prairie Helice?
Well, Ryan, Black Prairie Helice is fast becoming one of the premier Helice clubs in the country. We have six fields sanctioned and a seventh field that's plug and play. All of these fields are put into specs. They're all facing north to a little bit northeast. And that's what the specs call for, from where the shooter stands to where the machine sits. Is 0 to 0 elevation, and from where the machine sit to the top of the fences all the way around is 0 to 2 feet. And they look different, every one of them, but they all meet the same specifications. What's unique about these fields is, I mean, you can go from one to another, and you never get bored of shooting them. You never get bored of shooting one field because you're going to see different presentations all the time. Consistently.
And you guys host several events there throughout the year, don't you?
We do four big events a year, four sanctioned tournaments here a year. We've been fortunate to host the Nationals twice since we've been in existence. Those shoots consist of 130 to 160 shooters, and it's growing every year. In this, you know, we're now becoming post-pandemic. People are, you know, not refraining from going as they have been. We've got a really, really nice clubhouse and sitting area about halfway, about three rings down, where people can sit inside and look out and watch it in climate control conditions. We've got really, really decent climate control restroom facilities. And we don't mind transporting you from one end to the other. So no excuses.
Yeah. Well, Xavier, you are a wealth of knowledge and frankly, just a wonderful voice for Helice. Thank you for that great information.
Well, you're more than welcome, Ryan. I appreciate the opportunity. I think if people don't give themselves an opportunity to experience this, they're cheating themselves.
Very well said. So at this point, we've heard about Prairie Wildlife Property, and we've learned about Jalice. I wanted to bring Chris on to offer another perspective on both. Chris, welcome back. You're much more of a deliberate, technical, and honestly better shooter than I am, so I really like to hear your thoughts. What were your initial impressions of Jalice?
I wasn't sure what to expect, actually. I've seen videos on YouTube and things of that nature, but I had no real sense of the scale of the course, size of the birds, and how far you were from, let's say, the boxes that release the birds. So I was really kind of interested in seeing what that type of challenge was going to be. And when I got there, I was like, okay, this is not too bad. I was thinking it would be much farther away. So we started out at roughly 25 yards from the machine.
Right.
So I thought, okay, this is going to be doable. And then sort of how far from the machines was the fence where the white cap needs to fall into. So it was really more initially, what was the scale of the course? What were my obstacles to achieving the goals? And that's kind of how I thought about it. And then when we got there, I was like, okay, pleasantly surprised. This looks like this is all manageable. As soon as we got started, though, then it was obviously, we shot at night initially, which maybe that had a bigger impact on my score, as we know it did.
I wasn't going to bring it up.
I got routed on that first day, but I thought it was all doable, but it was very challenging.
Yeah. When you got up to the line the first time, was it faster? Was it a faster game than you expected it to be?
Yeah, because I shoot, sporting clays and things of that nature, you really understand the path of the clay in a sporting clays event. So you can sit there and analyze it a little bit, make a plan, things of that nature. This is completely different. There's no plan other than properly putting your eyes in the right location in terms of peripheral vision so that you can see the bird that is released. And then you just have to deliberately move towards it. And I think the goal there is to hit it as quickly as possible before it starts to do a bunch of squirrely loop-de-loops or gets caught by the wind or something to that effect. So it is a reactive game, but you have to be deliberate the way you shoot it.
Right. We each brought two guns with us to shoot Jalice for the weekend. What did you bring to shoot?
I brought my sporting clays gun, which is Cesar Guarini Invictus 1, 34-inch barrel with improved mod fixed chokes. And that gun, in the end, was ultimately the right gun for me for this event. The other gun I brought was a Connecticut shotgun manufacturing RBL, which is also kind of a unique gun. It was a 12 gauge, 32 inch barrel, and I was shooting, I believe, IM and mod in that as well. Each one will weigh about the same, about 8 pounds or so.
Yeah. And you felt like your Guarini was a little bit better suited for Jalice?
I think so. A little more well balanced for the reaction that I was, the reaction that you were needing to make. The RBL was a little more barrel heavy. So it didn't allow me to be as deliberate and quick. I think over time I could do pretty well with it, but I don't think it's the right tool for the job.
Yeah. So I brought my DT-11, and I also brought a 12-gauge Connecticut shotgun A-10 Sporter, both kind of heavy target guns. I alternated back and forth, and I think I shot the exact same score each race that we shot. So I don't know that either was just a flat out better choice for Jalice. Actually shot both of them pretty well.
Yeah, I shot the A-10. I actually liked it quite a bit.
Yep. That gun, it's a nice gun. It's got an adjustable comb, 32-inch barrels, nice wide rib. Like I said, it's over 8 pounds. It's nice. I really like it. Really like it. So, are you hooked? What's your takeaway on Jalice from this trip?
It's something that I want to get better at. It's something that I'd like to try to compete in. I actually was going to try to get over to to a facility in Illinois. They're having shoots every so often, so I'm going to just certainly go over there and get a feel for how they operate. But I'm definitely going to try to become a little more proficient at it and get into some of the competition.
Yeah. Xavier and I wrapped up our conversation by agreeing how beneficial shooting Jalice could be for wing shooters getting back into the mindset of instinctive shooting, just getting themselves ready for hunting in the fall. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Yeah, this is get your eyes calibrated, get your reaction time on par with what you need to be doing out in the field, I think, for sure. Quail in particular would be an excellent type of practice.
Yeah. How would you summarize your overall experience just at Prairie Wildlife?
I really liked it. It was an interesting drive in. I mean, I've not really spent a lot of time in Mississippi, but I think the route that we went in on was great. It was kind of a meandering way into the facility, and it gave you some perspective on the ruralness of where it is and just the general terrain and environment. That was really a kind of a neat entry. And then the facility, just, it's pretty impressive. Clubhouse was really nice. I really liked the accommodation. Food was excellent. And then when we took the tour of all the other areas, they put a lot of money and time and thought into what they're doing there. So I think it's an excellent venue for a lot of things.
Right. Highly, highly recommended.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Chris, I appreciate it. It's always fun to set off on these trips with you. I appreciate the feedback and kind of the color that you add. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
When you first visit Prairie Wildlife, you'll undoubtedly cross paths with the owner, Mr. Jimmy Bryan. He might pull up to you in one of the several Land Rover Defenders or on horseback, or he might be sitting next to you at breakfast, lunch, or dinner. Mr. Bryan is intimately involved with the daily operations and makes a point to introduce himself to his guests. Last year, he was awarded the prestigious Precision Farmer of the Year Award by Quail Forever. This award recognizes the innovative use of precision ag technology and the utilization of data to identify profitable solutions for agriculture and wildlife on working lands throughout America. It is a real honor for me to introduce you now to Mr. Jimmy Bryan. Thank you, sir, for helping wrap this episode up. I appreciate that.
Oh, you're always welcome.
Well, you took us on an almost 90-minute tour of your property in your Range Rover, I might add. And it's clear that you're deeply attached to your property. And I want to thank you for sharing it with the rest of us. Coming from a background in cattle, where the land that you own is seen primarily through a commercial use lens, what first inspired you to begin returning portions of your property to more of a natural state?
Well, it's kind of a long story. I grew up riding horseback all over this place, hunting, and in 64, I quit that because of building a business, the house, and the fourth child coming, and lost my bird dog, so I just put my nose to the grindstone for about the next 25 years, and we ran a stock and feed operation where we buy and sell cattle and ship it all over the country. Plus, we graze cattle ourselves. And I kind of got burned out on that. The industry was changing a lot. I kind of decided I wanted to slow down and thought back about my days growing up hunting quail. Bought me a couple of dogs, and then I realized I didn't have any birds. So I got with a biologist over Mississippi State, and he spent the day with me, and he told me all the things I needed to do. And I said, well, Dr. Berger, you're telling me I need to make this place look like it did in the 50s. He said, that's exactly right. He said, if you think about it, look around, you've taken out all the habitat. The new farming practices were fence row to fence row. Cattle grazing was intensive grazing with fescue and Bermuda grass. And we had to revert back. So we slowly started piecemeal things together, and then we realized there was some NRCS programs we could adapt that would help. I did a lease program on some of my lesser farm ground and planted in native grass for research projects. When that lease was up, I decided to keep it that way. So we just systematically went all over the place, putting in diverting water down drains and putting in riparian areas, putting in field borders. And it's a very slow process. I finally asked Dr. Berger after about 3 years, and I said, Miss, this isn't working. I'm going to have to release some birds. He said, no, stay with me. It'll work. And we did it pretty intensively, and all of a sudden we had a big increase in quail. And then we lagged a little bit. He got busy, and I got busy. Let it revert back a little. Population went down. Then we came back full force, and since then it's been going upwards. But as time went on, I spent less time in the cattle business, more time over here. And now we're totally out of the cattle business other than grazing 300 or 400 head. We still farm our best ground, but we've got a nesting habitat all around it. So we've kind of diversified more in conservation, a little bit into commercial ag, where before it was all commercial ag and just a small amount of conservation. So my days are mostly spent riding around trying to keep improving what we're doing and maintain it.
Yep. Well, it's apparent that you know every square foot of your land and what's growing on it and the wildlife that's supported. Yeah. Do you feel like the work to transition the Prairie Wildlife Property is complete, or is there more yet to do?
In my mind, it's never complete. First thing you got to do, you got to maintain what you've done.
Right.
Maybe an annual or semi-annual basis. And then I come up with different ideas that I want to do to make it better. And it's not the way we do it. It's not cheap. Our return has not been very great, but we're about to build it up. We started I was just doing it for my own use. Then I realized that was going to take a long time and a lot of money. And so I decided to start doing some commercial release hunts to kind of supplement it. And then we just built a lodge. Nothing was planned 3 years in advance. It just kind of popped up every year. So we built the tower and did resident releases. And now we're into shooting sports with the police and five stand and line shoots. And we've about done all of that we can do now. We just got to perfect it and continue to improve the habitat.
Yeah. Well, you're close. I'd say you're very close. Are you still working pretty closely with MSU?
Yes, we are. We're working very close with them. I set up a foundation for quail research. Got a couple other guys involved in it. One of them, real substantial investment. So we got about a $2 million endowment that they can use to hire graduate students to do research work. And now we're working with Mississippi State to put in a sporting dog kennel. And it'll be nothing like it in the world. Purina's already bought into it pretty big. It's a 100 bird kennel, self-staffed with a veterinarian, use students to do the work. We'll run the kennel, do the training, and Purina will do a lot of trials there. So I think within a month or so, we'll be on our way fundraising to get that project done. It'll do a lot for Mississippi State Vet School.
Yeah. Yep. Well, Mr. Bryan, I want to thank you again for sharing Prairie Wildlife with us. It's really a place that you should be especially proud of.
Well, that's all I do every day now. So nearly everything out here, I laid it out myself. Just thinking about times. Somebody asked me if I ever went to England to shoot high birds. I said no. I said, well, how'd you come up with this idea? I said, well, pretty easy to come up with an idea if you just read and study a little bit. I think it's about 5 years to perfect it. That's one of the best driven shoots in the country.
Yep, you're talking about your tower shoot.
Yeah, tower shoot.
Yeah, I have to say that your tower is nothing like I've ever seen before. It is absolutely amazing. I think a good word for it is it's imposing.
Yeah, it's almost as challenging as a leash.
I bet. I absolutely want to get back soon to try it out.
And we've got a few folks that just absolutely love it, and they do very good at it. It's not for everybody, but it's a challenging sport.
Yeah.
And then just this is serene, the serene look up there. We were up there last night drinking wine. My granddaughter was home and just sitting there watching that. Went to watch sundown, but didn't had too many clouds. But great way to end the day.
Yeah. Yeah. And speaking with you has been a great way to end this episode. I truly can't wait to get back down to visit again with you.
Sounds good. Look forward to having you down here to shoot a little with us next season.
Definitely. Definitely. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Well, I hope this has piqued your interest in Jalice. Hopefully you'll take time to find a club near you where you can try it. And if you need to travel a bit, why not incorporate a stay at Prairie Wildlife? You will certainly be glad you did. This episode has been a ton of fun to put together. I hope you've enjoyed it. I want to remind you to follow us on Instagram and Facebook, tell a friend about the podcast, and if you'd like to support what we're doing with a few dollars, check out our Patreon page at www.patreon.com/abreakintheaction. Have you had a chance to check out our great sponsors yet? I hope the products and services that they offer are as good a fit for you as they have been for me. Negrini's Italian Design Crash Test Double Wall Bumper Technology is the strongest, lightest weight case in the shooting sports and outdoor industry. How light? Up to 65% lighter than most aluminum gun cases. All Negrini cases are TSA compliant and come with a limited lifetime warranty. Luxury finishes in 100% Italian leather are available to complement your beautiful shotgun. With over 40 years of experience making the best quality cases, you can trust that Negrini has you covered. Since 1937, Dewberry of Ireland has been expertly combining rugged, all-weather functionality with timeless style for both men and women. Not only are they home to the Galway boot, the iconic, original, waterproof, breathable, Gore-Tex-lined leather Wellington boot, but they also craft a wide collection of footwear, clothing, and accessories to handle whatever conditions life might throw at you. Check them out at dewberry.com to discover your perfect fit. Boschieri and Pellagri is recognized worldwide for its design, production, and distribution of premium shot shell ammunition and components. From its custom powders and plastic wads to its innovative Gordon system cases and loaded ammunition, B&P has a long demonstrated history of providing high-quality shot shell products for smoothbore guns for use in competition and in hunting. B&P shot shells, primed to perform. Established in 1985, Cole Fine Guns and Gunsmithing is a family-owned and operated business serving shotgun enthusiasts across the United States and beyond. Known as the Beretta experts and specializing in European shotguns, there is no better place to make your next purchase or access a full menu of shotgun services. Cole has developed a team of shotgun experts, the most complete in the industry, and the most extensive service offerings in the industry. For a limited time, Cole is offering special pricing on new DT-11s with either custom stocks or TSK adjustable stocks. Details are available at www.colegun.com. Find out for yourself what the Cole experience is all about. Thanks for listening, everyone. I'll be at the Southern Side-by-Side on Thursday and Friday this year. Make sure you introduce yourself and say hi. And until next time.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of A Break in the Action. Want to hear your voice on a future episode? Leave a message, ask a question, or suggest a topic on our listener line at 317-662-4520. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram and Facebook, and visit us at abreakintheaction.com.